It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is a nice day. Currently 54 degrees under partly cloudy skies. Out of the airport, they are showing variable winds to 7 miles per hour, 57% humidity, and 10 miles of visibility. Coming up on the Midday Report, as the war between Russia and Ukraine goes on, more shipments of Russian oil are going through the Bering Strait, causing concern among community members there. The Environmental Protection Agency has announced a $2.5 million worth of grants to three Alaskan Native corporations to help clean up contaminated lands that were conveyed to them. And in Bethel, the battle over the Polk Road has come to the end.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A judge has ruled that former Trump lawyers Kenneth Chesbrough and Sidney Powell will be tried together this fall on charges that they conspired to interfere with Georgia's 2020 election results. Fulton County prosecutors still want to try all 19 co-defendants together, including former President Donald Trump, in a trial they estimate would take at least 4 months and involve 150 witnesses. Here's WABE Sam Greenglass.
Chesbrough and Powell separately asked for a speedy trial this fall, but prosecutors argued they were part of the same conspiracy, and so their cases shouldn't be severed from each other. Judge Scott McAfee agreed, but said he's skeptical all 19 can be tried together on October 23rd.
It just seems a bit unrealistic to think that we can handle all 19 in 40-something days.
The other defendants don't want to go to trial so soon, and some are in the middle of trying to move their cases to federal court. Judge McAfee says he'll issue a schedule for the others as soon as next week. For NPR News, I'm Sam Greenglass in Atlanta.
Extreme heat's triggering school shutdowns and other disruptions across the eastern U.S. just days into the new academic year. School districts in Pittsburgh and Baltimore opted to hold classes online. Other districts sent students home early because of inadequate air conditioning and over 90-degree temperatures. From Virginia to Michigan, schools experience heat-related problems. The amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere reached a new record in 2022, according to an annual meteorological report on the Earth's climate. NPR's Rebecca Hirsch reports other heat-trapping gases also hit record highs.
Carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide are all released into the atmosphere by humans and trap excess heat, which causes worldwide climate change. The concentration of those gases in the atmosphere is still rising, according to a sweeping annual report by the American Meteorological Society. Human reliance on fossil fuels is largely to blame. The so-called State of the Climate Report for 2022 laid out the many effects of those greenhouse gas emissions, including drought, floods, intense hurricanes, deadly heat waves, and disappearing ice and snow. The report also notes that 2022 was the 11th year in a row that the average sea level on Earth hit a new record. Rebecca Hirscher, NPR News.
Stocks closed lower again on the second day of a shortened trading week. Here's NPR's David Gura.
The services sector continued to expand last month, but job growth was subdued across the United States in July and August. That's according to the Federal Reserve's latest beige book. Most of the 12 regional banks in the Fed system reported inflation slowed, especially in the manufacturing sector, and they said economic growth was modest. Wall Street expects the Fed will not raise interest rates at its next meeting later this month, but the probability of a hike at the following meeting in November has increased.
It's NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. As the war between Russia and Ukraine continues, much of the Western world has cut itself off of Russian oil. China and India remain Russia's largest customers for oil, and that dynamic is driving a significant increase in the shipments of Russian oil through the Bering Strait. Nat Hirst with the Northern Journal has written about it and how that increased traffic is making Alaska communities along the Bering Sea, many of whom rely on subsistence hunting, wary of potential oil spills from Russian ships. Hirst told Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early that the issue has to do with the Northern Sea route Russia uses for shipping.
Normally, in non-wartime, Russia produces a lot of oil in the kind of Arctic, North Sea, Arctic Ocean type area. And they, you know, in the past have shipped a lot of that oil to Europe and I think also to Asia. And, you know, typically they'll send that oil basically down around Western Europe and through the Mediterranean, the Suez Canal, and on to Asia if that's where it's going. Right now, when there is not enough ice to block ship traffic, it's actually faster to send that oil around, all the way around Northern Europe, around sort of Arctic Russia, back down through the Bering Strait and over to Asia that way. It actually cuts 2 weeks off of the shipping time, which normally I think is about a month and a half. Europe has stopped buying Russian oil because of the sanctions, because of the war. And if they're sending a lot of this oil to Asia and there's a faster way to get it there through this Northern Sea route, that is particularly during this time of year, because this is sort of the warmest point when there's as, you know, little ice as there's going to be, that's really what makes it attractive.
You reported that there are concerns about how the increase in traffic will impact Alaska communities along the route. What are the main concerns you've heard from some of those villages?
Well, first of all, I think you have to just understand the nature of, like, this place. These are some of the most remote communities in America. Like, you think about Diomede Island, which there are two Diomede Islands in the Bering Strait. One is Russian, one is American. Little Diomede is on the American side of the strait. I think it's like 80 people. You know, I tried to call there last week while I was doing this reporting. Like, you can't. People there, you can't even reach them on the phone, and you know they don't have like a police force or a Coast Guard base or, you know, much at all. And so there, and then there are, you know, slightly larger communities on the mainland. There's Wales, there are communities on St. Lawrence Island, which is just south of the strait, and then there's Nome, which is, you know, a decent sized hub community. But you know, if an accident were to happen and a boat, you know, major like tanker or container vessel like gets loose and is drifting around, or God forbid there's an oil spill, like there's almost literally nothing in this region that you know would make for an adequate response. Like there aren't large vessels that could do towing. There aren't like major assets for oil spill response. And so there's major concern that if this were to happen, there would be no ability to contain it. I think additionally, one of the things we know also about these communities and about this region is that, it's really far from the road system. It's really far from like a supermarket. None of these villages have like a supermarket. Like they probably don't get any fresh produce. Like most of their food comes from the Bering Sea. It's marine mammals. It's fish. It's birds. And so if there's an oil spill in this area, like that has the potential to really have ruinous consequences for these communities.
How closely is Alaska's congressional delegation monitoring this issue?
Yeah, I think this is that's a really interesting question, because I think, you know, for years, certainly from my perspective as a reporter, it's like we hear this constant drumbeat from our congressional delegation about like icebreakers and Arctic security and preparedness. And I think honestly, like in the past have been kind of inclined to like dismiss some of that as just sort of like your typical congressional delegation, efforts to get a bunch of federal money for any purpose, and sort of feeling like this is sort of a promised trend that really hasn't actually materialized in the way that it's been promised. But I think, you know, stuff like what is happening now and the fact that you had Chinese and Russian warships doing drills near the Aleutians earlier this summer and last summer, like, I think this is starting to get some traction.
That was Northern Journal reporter Nat Hurst speaking with Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early. The Environmental Protection Agency has announced $2.5 million in grants to three Alaska Native corporations. They're part of a $20 million appropriation from Congress to clean up contaminated lands that were conveyed to Native corporations under the 1971 Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. The announcement came when EPA Administrator Michael Regan made the final stop of his Alaska tour in Fairbanks last week. Regan says this first round of funding barely addresses the problem.
Just the breadth of contaminated lands, contaminated conveyed lands, is astounding. And so in addition to this $20 million, we had a lot of discussions with local leaders about how we could devise strategies to acquire resources from other programs.
Regan also visited Ukiagvik last week, where the Ukiagvik Inupiat Corporation is based. It will receive $600,000 to remove asbestos and other contaminants from the old U.S. Navy Arctic Research Center, as well as clean up an oil spill. Pearl Brower, president of the UIC, says lands across rural Alaska have been heavily contaminated due to years of extensive military activity. She says Ukiagvik is just a small portion of the lands in need of the cleanup, but calls it a good first step. Brower says she looks forward to a time when her children and grandchildren can subsist off of clean land and water. Senator Lisa Murkowski, who championed the legislation, is also looking to find other sources of federal money to clean up more Native corporation lands, which she calls, quote, an injustice perpetrated by the federal government.
It thwarts their ability to fulfill the promise of ANCSA, was that they would be able to utilize their lands for the betterment of their people. But when your lands are contaminated and you can't access them for development, much less berry picking, that's not keeping our promise.
The Tyonek and Unalashka corporations will each receive $1 million in funding. Tyonek will use the money to inventory and clean up contaminants on the Inniskin Peninsula. The Unalashka Corporation will target pollution from World War II, removing soil contaminated with PCBs, as well as sampling soil and water at a warehouse in Dutch Harbor. In Bethel, the contentious battle over Polk Road has come to an end. Polk Road, or Tundra Ridge Road, is a dirt trail that links the Tundra Ridge neighborhood to BIA Road, turning the city's horseshoe-shaped traffic pattern into a loop. However, it ran through the Polk family's native allotment, and the family wanted to keep the road private. The city preferred an alternative route, but it was more expensive to construct. But in 2021, a federal judge ruled that the Alaska Department of Transportation could take possession of the Polk Road in the summer of 2022 via eminent domain, meaning the power of the government could take the Polk family's private property despite its opposition and, with compensation to property owners, convert it into public use. The opening of the road decreases commute time for residents living in Tundra Ridge and creates access for emergency vehicles. As KYUK's Sunny Bean reports, now the State Department of Transportation is working on plans to upgrade the road and keep it open to the public.
Now that the state is in charge of Polk Road, it's planning to rehab the dirt road before officially opening it to the public. Department of Transportation Administrative Operations Manager Justin Shelby.
So that project is, we're planning to kick that off for the next construction season. And once that project is complete, that road will be turned over to the city of Bethel to maintain.
Though many are already driving on the dirt road, it's extra muddy and full of potholes, and DOT considers it closed until the project is complete. They have the designs, but are still in the planning phase for construction.
Yeah, we just got a contractor on board for this a little while ago, so we don't have a schedule yet. Likely it will be late spring, early summer, but that's just an estimate at this point.
While initially KYUK reported construction was due to start this summer and the new road would be paved, now, the state expects construction to start next construction season, and it'll be gravel.
We're going to bring it up to the kind of the same quality of road as the other gravel road in that area, but it'll be a much better condition road than the that section by Marker Lake will in particular will be improved quite a bit.
So there is no exact timeline, but the state says Polk Road will be greatly improved when the job is complete. And at last, the battle over Polk Road has finally come to a resolution. In Bethel, I'm Sunny Bean.
Congresswoman Mary Peltola emphasized her support for Arctic drilling and other Alaska energy projects in a telephone town hall meeting last week. She repeatedly mentioned Willow, ConocoPhillips' new project in the western Arctic.
I've worked with our senators, Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan, our labor unions and Alaskans from every region, to get the Willow project approved. This is the largest North Slope oil field investment in decades, which will bring 2,000 jobs and billions of dollars of revenue for Alaska.
Peltola also spoke of her support for Alaska's liquefied natural gas export plan and smaller renewable energy projects for Alaska communities. Next week marks Peltola's one-year anniversary in Congress. As a Democrat running for re-election in an oil-producing state, she's trying to set herself apart from the mainstream of her party on energy, while Republicans, including opponent Nick Begich, aim to tie Peltola to high gas prices and conservation policies of the Biden administration. She used a largely scripted town hall to highlight her pro-development views. Peltola says climate change is hitting Alaskans particularly hard, but she called out climate advocates for hypocrisy.
I take umbrage with some of these extreme environmental groups because I don't feel like many of the people in that movement are willing to curtail any of their energy uses, whether it's on their computer or in their car or plane trips, but they expect us to stop producing.
Peltola's office described the tele-town hall call-in as the Congresswoman's first use of this format. U.S. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development Marcia Fudge visited Kenai on Wednesday, August 30th, to announce a major federal grant for local tribes. KDLL's Riley Board has more.
Fudge appeared at the Kenaitse Indian Tribe's year-old education campus to announce $7.5 million for an affordable housing project.
So today, as a leader in the Biden-Harris administration, it is my responsibility to do all that I can to give you and support your right to not just live, but to thrive.
The money will go to a special group that represents two Kenai area tribes, Kenaitse and Salamatoff. It will fund an 18-unit elder housing project in Kenai. So far this year, the program says it has served almost 200 households in areas like student housing and homelessness prevention. It also helps with services like snow plowing, fire safety, and urgent home repairs. Carla Wick, chairperson for that Kenaitse Salamatoff housing entity, said the elder housing has been a dream for 20 years and thanked the Biden-Harris administration and Fudge for their support of tribal interests.
I'm so honored to have acknowledgement from the administration to come to our area and come see us. You know, we don't get these visits up in the great white north that often from Washington, and it's truly appreciated.
The money is part of a broader package of $128 million distributed across 22 tribes and intended for affordable housing development. It comes from the Indian Housing Block Grant, which provides funding for housing infrastructure on reservations and related areas. The Tlingit Haida Regional Housing Authority in Juneau is also receiving $7.5 million from this award. Fudge is the latest of several cabinet secretaries to visit Alaska this summer to promote federal funding. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg and Attorney General Merrick Garland both visited multiple Alaska communities this August. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
No one was hurt during last month's record flooding in Juneau, but a cat named Leo went missing when a home collapsed into the Mendenhall River. But as KTOO's Katie Anastas reports, he's home now and safe.
Elizabeth Wilkins rented the white house on Riverside Drive that fell into the river. She spent the last month looking for a new place to live. She's also been looking for Leo, a black and white cat with yellow eyes.
You can come over. Come on over. This is about you. He's pretty great.
Leo had been missing since last month's flood. On Thursday, she found him. Now, they're sitting together on the floor of a cabin out the road. Wilkins says reuniting with Leo has provided a break from the stress of the last several weeks.
Yesterday, we couldn't stop, like, laughing because it just felt really good, like this release to just be like, oh, my gosh, this is, like, the best thing that anyone's ever heard in at least a month, you know. It's nice to have some good news.
David Albert adopted Leo with Wilkins during the pandemic. He says Leo seems relieved, too.
He slept hard last night, and he was just a little snuggle bug. Like, every time I'd sit, he'd come over and sit on my lap and sleep on my chest, and he's just so happy to be among family again.
Wilkins and Albert were both out of town during the flooding, but they watched the viral video of the house collapsing into the river. They think all the noise made Leo run away before it fell in.
I watched the video of the house over and over again just to, like, calculate, just to, like, figure out, A, what was it like to be in it, and is it possible that he's okay, or is it impossible? And I look, just looking at the video, that, you know, the disaster that was, it was hard to imagine that anybody could be okay.
Still, Wilkins spent the next few weeks scrolling through photos posted by Juneau residents trying to help people find their missing cats. Then, on Thursday, someone posted a photo of a black and white cat in her yard in a Juneau Facebook group. He had a distinctive black spot on the back of his right leg.
We had been analyzing all these black and white cat photographs, and this time it was him for sure.
Wilkins teaches at Montessori Borealis and Juneau Community Charter School. After school on Thursday, she went looking for Leo at the woman's house, less than a mile from her former home. She called his name, and Leo came running out. Leo is no fraidy cat. He was rescued from an abandoned building, and he still spends a lot of time outside. Wilkins thinks it served him well this last month.
I think he has been using his best survival skills. He is a good hunter.
Still, Albert says Leo has lost some weight.
He's on an all-you-can-eat diet now.
Wilkins is house-sitting for friends while she looks for a more permanent place to live. She's considering all her options, including a camper van, a tiny home, or even a sailboat. She's hopeful something will work out. Leo purrs on the couch next to her and Albert.
This is just like a little glimmer of hope or life, a little tiny good news in this otherwise really, really sad and catastrophic story.
Leo has already caught a mouse since he got home. But between his outdoor excursions, he's lounging on the couch and enjoying his kibble, happy to be back with his favorite humans. In Juneau, I'm Katie Anastas.
Today's KMXT local news is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
All eyes are on oil. I'm Kristen Schwab with the Marketplace Minute. Oil prices are coming back down this morning after rising more than 1% yesterday when Saudi Arabia and Russia said they'd keep oil production low through the end of the year. Overall, prices are up 25% since June. The U.S. trade deficit widened slightly in July to $65 billion, less than expected. That's mostly because of a jump in exports of pharmaceuticals and cars. Big picture, the deficit is falling. It's down more than 20% from the same period a year ago. Kroger and Albertson are nearing a deal to offload around 300 stores. The two grocers have been looking to sell so they can get regulatory approval for a $25 billion merger that's been held back by antitrust concerns. I'm Kristen Schwab with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate leasing and management. JLL.com.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 6th day of September, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 7:20. It will set again at 8:53, giving us 13 hours and 33 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 54 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 70 degrees, set in 1965 and then again in 1985, and a record low was 35 degrees, set in 1976. Currently 54 degrees under partly cloudy skies here in Kodiak. Out at the airport, they have variable winds to 7 miles per hour, 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for sunny skies for the rest of the day with a high near 57, west winds to 15, gusting to 20. Partly cloudy overnight with a low around 43 and west winds to 15, gusting to 25. And for tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, although with isolated showers in the afternoon, high around 56, west winds to 10. Let's check with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 42, issued 9 a.m. September 5th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Wednesday, September 6th, till 6 p.m. Friday, September 8th, in the inner Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District. Closed waters adjustments. Closed waters will be reduced from noon Wednesday, September 6th, to 6 p.m. Friday, September 8th, in the following area: at Karluk Lagoon's exit channel terminus at the ocean shoreline. As previously announced, the following areas are open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice: the outer Aikuluk, outer Karluk, Sturgeon, and Halibut Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Northeast Kodiak District, the Eastside Kodiak District, Cape Alatak, Alatak Bay, Humpy Deadman, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District, northwest of Fogneck, Raspberry Strait, Duck Bay, Iziut Bay, Outer Gatoy Bay, southwest of Fogneck, and northeast of Fogneck sections of the Fogneck District and the Mainland District. Closed waters are expanded until further notice in that portion of the southwest of Fogneck section of the Fogneck District within 1/2 nautical mile of the beach near the terminus of Molina Creek. Until further notice, within the Kodiak area, only that portion of northwest Kodiak and southwest Kodiak districts south of the latitude of Cape Kuliuk, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear. It must be returned to the water unharmed. Cost recovery fisheries began in the Katoa Bay Special Harvest Area on September 2nd. Cost recovery information may be obtained by calling 486-6559. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area stat charts and detailed in the commercial salmon fishing regs. Stat charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. Recent salmon fishery announcement information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559.
And here is your weather forecast, mariners, for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory for today and tomorrow. West winds to 25 knots today and seas to 4 feet. West 20 tonight and 5-foot seas, and west 25 tomorrow, except west 15 north of Dangerous Cape, seas to 4 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tonight. West winds to 25 knots for today and tonight in the Shelikof and seas to 6 feet. For tomorrow, northwest 20 and seas to 4 feet. Elder Storytime has been rescheduled for Friday. That's happening 10:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. at the Kodiak Public Library. Again, that's next Friday. Elder Storytime, 10:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. at the library. Kodiak's Fairwind players are back for another round of Boo. It's Boo 2, our Halloween spectacular debuted last year to such acclaim that we decided to do it again with all the new, silly, scary short skits and a short play as well. There are parts for just about every age group and any level of experience. If you even wanted to even try your hand at acting, this is your chance to show your stuff. It'll be fast, it'll be fun, and you'll have a howlingly good time. Auditions are Thursday night, September 7th, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, the 10th, from noon to 2 p.m. in the Drama Pod. Performances will be on the 27th and 28th of October. No need to bring anything. Just show up on Thursday or Sunday, and they'll take it from there. You need kids from ages 8 to 108, mostly teen to adult. Call Mike or Pam at KMXT at 486-3181 for more information. It's going to be beautiful. But again, auditions are Thursday night from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. and Sunday from noon to 2 p.m. And the Kodiak Arts Council is excited to bring back the Community Choir and Orchestra for Joy 2023, a wonderful holiday concert celebrating the magic and warmth of the season with festive music. If you're interested in performing, auditions for Joy 2023 will be held Sunday, September 10th. That's next Sunday, 2023, at 2 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium's main stage and band room. Audition goers must be 18 and above to audition, and with intermediate to advanced proficiency in choir or orchestra. Audition forms are available at www.kodiakarts.org, the Kodiak Arts Council website. And for questions and more information, call them at 907-942-5840 or email kodiakartscouncil@gmail.com. And the Kodiak City Council will be having a planning work session today at 3 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. It's open to the public and will be web-streamed as well. That link, as well as packets, are on the City of Kodiak website.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.